Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Penalty Loop Podcast, a podcast about biathlon by Jordan Gottschalk from Penalty Loop and a regular guest, RJ Weiss from Biathlon Analytics.
The season is over.
That's so dramatic.
I know. It is dramatic.
It is, yeah. This was...
I think last time I said it's not really sinking in because it was so like full of thoughts. Mm-hmm. About Canmore, and now it's starting to sink in that it's done again. But before we go any further, we're at episode 99. I think by now people have figured out that you would like to move to Canada at some point. Mm-hmm. So you must know what 99 stands for.
No, I don't. Oof.
Come on.
What? No, what is it?
What's important for Canadians?
Maple syrup.
Okay.
Hockey. I don't know. Hockey. No, I still don't know. Oh, Gretzky, the great one. This is the great one.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. I'm almost to the point where I feel like we shouldn't have used the number because it's, you know, it's one of those protected numbers. But
retired.
I'm sure he's not huge on biathlon following, so I think we'll be okay.
I don't know. We get a couple of occasional downloads from LA. Maybe that's him.
A second thing I want to hit right off the bat is my sincere apologies to Tobias Torgerson.
I know.
On day one after the women's sprint, I stuck around because I knew that the men were going to practice. Mm-hmm. And I just ran into him and had a super cool conversation in which, amongst other things, he mentioned that, you know, there was some tension in the team because they could end up being 10th in the Nations Cup standings, which would allow the Polish team to have an additional athlete, in which he succeeded, we now know. But Tobias, my apologies that we didn't mention you as one of our people that we talked to in Canmore. But with this,
apologies,
I hope
you... and enormous congratulations.
Oh, of course,
On the top 10 Nations Cup finish. I think we mentioned it last time, but or 2 times ago. But yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Gotta make room for all those Polish athletes.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not kidding at all. It's a really big help having the extra starting bid.
Yeah. No, and it's very impressive what the whole group has accomplished. So, we wish him all the best for the next season.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I wanted to bring up before we even get started, we talked about Anna Gantler in the last mass start dropping her magazine or had some issues with the magazine. Mm-hmm. I didn't really look into it as much, but I realized that she lost roughly 16 seconds and that would have put her in second place. So I didn't realize it was such a, and she took it really well. Like it's, you know, part of the sport and you can't really look at what if, because, you know, we've had so many what if discussions about Lou Jeanmonod and there's always a lot of what ifs in biathlon and that just makes the sport interesting. But I didn't realize it would have made that much of an impact. So with that out of the way, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Is it springtime in Canmore? Springtime in Calgary?
Well, I went out on Monday night, and it was not too bad in Calgary. But then once I got to Canmore, I did a bit of skiing. Mm-hmm. And it got pretty cold and chilly. Like my hands were, I don't want to say frozen solid, but they were very cold. So shooting was not optimal, but I ended the day with a 5 for 5 on the standing, and I had made a new standing block for myself. So I didn't really know if it was going to work, but it worked really well. So not going to change anything.
That's fantastic.
And that brings me to a question to you.
Yes.
And I did not. Did you happen to look up a lap time?
Yeah.
So what I did, and I'm kind of embarrassed for it, but whatever. So I'm going to just pick a loop time for, oh my God.
Lompage.
course time. Okay. So into sprint.
Yes.
In warmer conditions than I had on Monday, for sure. But, you know, my wax is not as good. So let's even that out. Lampage skied a 2.5 kilometer loop in 6 minutes. On Monday night, I did the same loop. And you are allowed to guess what my time was.
I think that your 2.5 kilometer loop was 8 minutes and 37 seconds.
Well, I do appreciate your confidence in me. It was actually one lap was 9 minutes and one was 9.5.
Yeah.
And again, you know, conditions, wax, everything's different. Top athletes versus an old guy. But I had no idea what their lap time was.
Yeah.
So the gap is less than I would have expected.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But again, my snow was hard and crispy.
Yeah.
And we know that was not the case for them. But, you know, what is it? 150% time of Lampage?
Yeah.
Actually makes me feel not too bad about it.
No, it's not bad at all. No. Right?
I didn't look up Bo, but...
So I looked up lap one of the pursuit. Ponch Loma was the fastest, and he was 5 minutes and 33 seconds.
Oh my God. That's so fast. I mean, like, and, you know, it's not like I died after I did my lap, so maybe I can scrape off another 10 seconds, but yeah.
Let's see. I'm looking for see if there's a faster lap. If anybody had a faster single lap. No.
But the men didn't always do the 2.5 loop though, right?
It's just the pursuit.
And as we're looking for fastest loop times, how's your roller skiing going in Florida?
It has not started yet. No. I saw the Instagram that you sent me, but I have not gotten started yet.
Oh, Lampage, lap 3, 5 minute, 23 seconds.
Yeah, see?
But I think that might be a little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless.
I will, if you guys want a look somewhere close to me, there's a place called Lake Apopka, and there are a bunch of mildly viral videos that pop up of people biking around Lake Apopka and the about 700 alligators you'll see on your way. So, you know, maybe I should go out there and do some roller skiing.
Well, at least you have two pointy sticks with you.
Yeah, just fight them off. I
mean, they'd snap it in half in a second,
absolutely.
But at least you can poke an eye out of self-defense.
Yeah, that'd be the first gator. The second gator, that's the one I got to worry about. All right, so...
But in all seriousness, have you ever seen somebody on roller skis?
Nope, nobody around here. Yeah, I mean, honestly, nobody would know what you were doing. They would think that you were an absolute lunatic. They would think that you were on, like, bizarro rollerblades, which is sort of what they are, but yeah.
Okay, a lot of things to work on before you get here.
Okay, well, I'll get going. I got the water skiing down. We got a whole season to talk about. And we're going to try to do it in one episode. So it's going to be about 3.5 to 4 hours, maybe. Everyone, prepare yourselves. I guess you can see the time at this point.
Yeah.
So did you want to go through, we should have prepared more. Did you want to go through chronologically? Do you want to go through just like we normally do? Thoughts off the top of our head and just go back and forth?
I've written down a number of questions that if you would have one of them right, I would be very shocked. Because they're definitely not that I don't think you're knowledgeable.
No, but, maybe I looked up the same thing.
Yeah, who knows? And then I had a list of things that stood out to me in a positive and less positive way for both men and women. Mm-hmm. And I had some general thoughts on the season.
Yeah, awesome.
Some surprises. And then I made a list of Globe contenders for next year.
Yes, just what I asked you to do. So we can finish up with that. Mm-hmm. So how about we just start going through our top things. Most of mine revolve around athletes, you know, just mm-hmm. and their stories throughout the year. So I don't know if you want to go that way or if you had something else you wanted to hit first, if there are some big picture things, talk a lot about wax, about weather, about all that kind of stuff. But I think we covered that pretty well throughout the season.
Yeah. Let's go through some athletes that, really stood out or not so much
let's start out. I actually kind of want to start out with, I mean, this is a topic we've talked about a lot, but Mr. J Tebow, and his fifth globe. Right. And I guess the thing I kept coming back to was and I think this sort of gets locked in early in the year, right? Just your initial impressions sort of set the tone and you kind of react to that the rest of the season. But I think a lot of the season, and because it became such a close race at the end, was the thought of him not being as dominant or as good as he was a year prior. Now, that's hard because not this most recent season, but the season before was, you know, the greatest single season by athlete ever. So nothing is going to look as good as that. But I guess my question for you was, how did you feel this globe winning season compared to his prior globe winning seasons?
Well, I think that the Swedes always play a trick on us, right? Because they're always super strong at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. And it seems like JT needs a little bit of time to warm up or increase his interest, whatever you want to call it. Every season it seems you have that moment of, maybe he's not going to be as strong this season.
Yeah.
And I guess what impressed me most, and maybe I'm just reading into it, but that when it mattered, he was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And especially in Canmore, he was like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to, you know, get this over with.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't work that way, but that's always that's where I feel that he is clearly the globe winner.
Yeah.
Again, this season, that when it comes down to it, he just, it's almost like he puts in a little bit more effort and then everybody else, the sprint like over a minute ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like his opponents had like seven misses or whatever, and he was just lucky with the wind. Mm-hmm. Like, so.
Yeah. Sort of started with that Soldier Hollow pursuit where I think he started in 17th or came back and won it. And it was like, okay, this is, All right.
Yeah.
It was fun. I'm going to end it now. You know,
are you more impressed by JT or by Tarja?
Hold on to that thought. So JT, so I pulled a couple of things, and his shooting in the first four races versus the rest of the season. So in his first four races, he hit 81%. After that, he was 88% for the rest of the year. So clearly there was a change there. and I think, you know, you can look at that as contributing to why he started off the season a little bit slow too. But I also looked at his skiing the first half of the season versus skiing the second half of the season. And what made me do this actually was I was looking at his course time ranks for the for the year. And, you know, the first half of the year he's fast, you know, third, fifth, first, second, first. Those are course time ranks. Starting in Antholz, he goes this is, I'm going to read off his course time ranks for the rest of the season, and I apologize if I stumble a little bit. Second, first, seventh, first. So it was like he got halfway through the year and he was aiming for that world championship peak. He hit his peak and I think we talked about this maybe last week or the week before, but he hit that peak and then just carried it straight on through. And if you look at his, and this isn't a perfect metric, but it works for my purposes right now. He was, for the first half of the season, so up until Antholz, he was 5.2% faster than the median biathlete. From that point on, he was 6.4% faster than the median biathlete. And 6.4% carried over an entire season would be the second fastest or the second largest, the second largest gap by anybody. The fastest, of course, the largest gap being Bjørn Dalen from 20 years ago. But so he started off not quite as fast. He ended the season wildly fast.
That and then if you consider that some of these races where he had the fastest time, he didn't even have to go all out because he was leading in the end. And
Yeah.
And that, there were that there were a couple of races explained the seventh place, right?
In that's exactly in it. Because it was the
I don't know
it was
if he would pursuit. Have been first, but
yeah. He didn't need to be. He was just so far ahead. And there were a couple of races in there where he was like 10% faster than the median biathlete, which is just 10% is just an insane amount.
Is that median of the field or median of the
median
top 30?
Median of the field.
Of the field, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bit ridiculous.
I don't even know how to think about that, because if you think about like a 30-minute race, he's... I don't know. That's just... It's a lot of time.
Do you happen to remember what race it was? Because I remember from previous analysis if like the world championships are a little bit different because
not as many.
Some nations who don't qualify for the World Cup, I think, are allowed to race in the world championships with one athlete. I'm not 100% sure, but typically I think there's more athletes and including some that are weaker than. But anyway,
it was the Canmore Sprint.
It doesn't take away from
the Canmore Sprint.
Okay, well, yeah.
10.8%.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah.
So anyway.
A dude on Monday night was a dude flying by in an American suit with a Canadian biathlon hat on.
Uh-huh.
And it was Adam Runnels who was putting in some laps. And I think the Canadian.
Are you breaking some news?
No. I'm not. I missed his conversation with Roddy. I don't know. They probably exchange suits or whatever. But he was, because they have the Canadian championships coming up, I think, this weekend or maybe this week weekend. Already. But so he's probably just getting some miles in. But
I would love to know what it's like to be on the course with JT. And so I would love to ask one of these guys sometimes, like when you see him,
they probably don't see him most of the time.
That's a good point. I was just thinking more like if you're running like a sprint or an individual and you feel like you're doing pretty well and all of a sudden he just kind of chugs right by you, you know, I just, what
Could
that
you imagine like starting in front of him in a sprint and you're like, okay, well, 30 seconds, it's going to take, oh, there he is.
There you go. So, I know you're getting into the
I'm
range.
I'm going to try to follow him. Oh, no, forget about that.
You're laying down on the mat and then he's laying down right next to you and you're like, oh, man.
I know.
But anyway, that was all to mean like in my head, it feels like this was not as dominant a season, and it wasn't like it was a closer margin, but at times he was just as great as ever. So, you know, I can't ever get numb to it.
Who of the non big names like Dahle, Christensen, etc., stood out to you
for the men
on the men's side?
It's hard to say because. Well, okay. So I don't know if you're going to consider him a big name, but if you get beyond like the guys that are at the top or you include like Jacqueline in there or Jacquemel, because we've been talking about them for a while. I think for me, it was sort of the emergence of Perrault as I don't know if he's the number one Frenchman, because obviously Jacqueline was so good, but Jacqueline is just sort of more boom or bust. I think Perrault was a little more consistent in his performance, and I think for obviously with him being so young, I think he's like 22 years old, but just him really taking that step and becoming a real leader for the French and really I think for the future of men's biathlon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had Campbell Wright in there as well. You know, he was
for sure.
He was up and coming, but it wasn't to the point where you're like, oh yeah, he's gonna challenge for the globe in the next couple of years. But I think for me, he has a better chance of that in the future years than I would have thought last year. His switch to the American team obviously did him good, and I think did the American team good as well.
Yeah.
Stalder really impressed me. He's kind of an under the radar guy a bit. But he had a very strong season last year. And, you know, you see some athletes that kind of go up and down. But he had a really strong trimester one and two this year. Third trimester, he dropped off a little bit. But especially with Hartwick not being part of most of the races just because he wasn't feeling 100%, I thought his performance was really impressive and promising for the World Championships next year.
I completely agree. Actually, one of my goals for this summer is to do a project on the non-Norwegian up-and-coming, so the non-Norwegian next generation of biathletes. And so I had on my list, I had, you know, obviously Jacques Amel's on there, Hartvig's on there because they're amazing duel, Perrault is on there, and then I had Stalder and White, and those are, or Wright, excuse me, the guys I would like to interview this summer, both for the podcast and then for my own project as well, and kind of talk about how they're all, because all those guys are like 25 and younger.
Right.
And I think, you know, we'll be looking at them, you know, as
Stalder too. I thought he was a little bit older.
Or is not. He 26? I think he might just be a little bit older, but he's just older than
26.
Them.
So okay. Yeah.
But I just look at them as sort of the next group of guys coming up. Strello, I think, is just a couple years older than them. So I that's why I didn't include him in that group. But and then of course, you know, Samuelsson is still young and Ponsalom is not old, but I sort of include them as like the already established group. And maybe I should with Jacques Amel too, but that's a different issue.
So how many more seasons does Samuelsson have to have like he had this year before you don't consider him as a Globe contender anymore?
Well, that was actually a question I had for you.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, I know you asked me first. I don't know. I think he's still only 26. So I don't know. Maybe he's like Fionn Maillet, where he shows his potential, and then there's a sort of a funky year, and he breaks through and wins it. Because I think that the further away we get from Fionn Maillet, not taking anything away from him at all, right? He was amazing in that season. I think it was just a combination of him being amazing plus a lot of other, you know, i.e. the Norwegians, not aiming for the year long, but more aiming for the Olympics. And he was there at the right time to win it. I don't know. Maybe something similar happens for Samuelsson and 2028. I don't know. I'm just throwing a random year out there, but
it can happen. I mean, he's still like he was. First trimester, if you look at average points per race, he was ranked second. Yeah. The third trimester, he was ranked seventh.
Mm-hmm.
But then in just the middle.
Always the second trimester.
He was, 21st, I think.
It's like falls off the map.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is that just and, something
I
mean, that's...
I don't know if it had something to do with his health or not, but...
Every year? Because it feels like,
well,
that's
I don't
been
know,
like the last 4 years. It's like he starts out like a this is going to be the year, and then starts trailing off at the end of first trimester, second trimester. He's finishing primarily in the teens or the lower part of the top 10, and then I don't know.
I can't, like every time I think about it, I can't stop the thought that it's something mental that as soon as he gets one or two results that are not what he would hope. That it's sort of, it's almost like it breaks him a little bit. Wow. It'd be so amazing to see him have a consistent year that we can actually see his true potential.
So
and be in the race.
When I say Lucy in the football, do you know what I mean?
Lucy? Oh, is that from Snoopy Dogg? Or
yeah, so there's the comic strip, the Charlie Brown and Snoopy comic strip, and there's this joke because it would come up all the time, is that Lucy would hold the football and she would say, I'm not going to pull it this time, and Charlie Brown would say, no, I'm not going to do it because you're just going to pull it out and I'm going to fly through the air and land on my butt. And then she would finally convince him that, nope, this time you're actually going to be able to kick it. And so he would take this big run and go for the big kick. And of course, she would pull the football away and he would go flying. And I feel like that's what I do every year. And I'm going to keep doing it every year. So next season, when we go to Contiolati and he is amazingly fast again, I will say, this is the year, this is the time, it's going to happen. But, you know, I will allow myself to be disappointed because his talent is so overwhelming that you're just like, man, if I could just see one full season of this, it'd be mm-hmm. awesome. And I just, you know, eventually I hope it happens. So I actually wrote down his shooting. So 2 years ago, 83.9%. Last year, 86.7%. This year, 83.5%. And those were his total shooting numbers. And it's like, I wonder, I don't know. And I guess we could say this for a lot of guys, right? We're a lot of athletes, right? Same thing with Lompat, right? If they could just shoot a little bit better on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. It's like, I wonder if there was just a way to just infuse him with just like 3% more, right? If he could shoot 86, 87% and ski well, because last year when he shot 86.7%, his ski rank fell off a little bit. I just want to see it. I just want it to happen.
I wonder, like, I almost think it's not so much the extra percentage, like 3% mm-hmm. extra. It's more the consistency.
Yeah.
Because it gives you so much confidence if you have, you know, 5 races in a row where you should shoot 85%.
Yeah.
Where if you have, you know, 85, 85, 60, 85, 90. Like, even though the 90 is great and maybe puts you in a position to win that specific race, just knowing that on any day you can shoot at least 85%, mm-hmm. that must be almost more important maybe than knowing that you can do 100, but also that you can have a 60% or 50%. But I was actually surprised because I looked at the Simonator shooting because I thought it was well off his normal shooting, but he actually is a bit of an up and down athlete, not by much, but mm-hmm. and the numbers are just crazy, right? But for the last somewhat seasons, starting in 17-18, he went 88-6, 92-1, 87-5, 93-3, 89-5, 92-7, and then this year he had 88-4.
Huh.
So there's still quite a bit of fluctuation in that.
I would have expected
to see a flat line with a little dip this year, but
hey, you couldn't have given me a better lead-in. Speaking of flat lines, did you happen to take a look at Tarjei
for his consistency in points per year or something?
Consistency in everything.
Yeah.
So whatever you're doing, guys, right now, whatever you're doing, go to Real Biathlon, pull up Tarjei Boe, and just go through all of his stats. There's like no variance at all. It's incredible. So I actually wrote it down.
Is it not? Okay. I have one where I doubt that that's true. But
what's that?
His fourth shooting percentage.
Oh, I don't have that.
Because I thought he was solid the whole season. And only mm-hmm. in the last couple of races, he started missing like 3 shots and mm-hmm. 2 shots. And
I didn't look at that in specific. I just looked at his, like, where he was, like, for the last few years. Mm-hmm. And so, like, his last 9 seasons, these are his overall finishes. 6th, 36th, 7, 6, 4, 4, 6, 6, 2. And his ski rankings are all very good. His shooting percentage over the last decade has never been outside of a range between 85.2% and 88.6%. And that's every year for 10 years. And it's just, it's like, he just is, we talked, was this 2 years ago now? Was it last, the beginning of last season? You know, is he going to begin to fade? No, he's going to keep doing his normal thing. You just set him at the start of the season and he's going to go ahead and he's going to end up somewhere in the top 6 of the overall. He's going to shoot, you know, probably between 85 and 88%, and he's going to ski top top whatever. And yeah, it's pretty good. It's just,
but just keeps on going. If anything, his skiing has gotten faster.
It was faster. This was the third fastest season of his career. Also, this was, so he finished second in the overall this year. And I just want to share this before I forget. It was the longest gap between a top two and finishes in a career. So between a first top two finish and their most recent one. So like, I'm probably not describing this well, but if you look at, say, Bjørn Dalen, from the first time in his career that he finished in the on the in one or number one or number two in the overall, and then the last time he finished number one or number two in the overall, it was, I think, 10 seasons. And if you look at Tarja, it's now been 11. So it just goes to show how long he's been able to have this this level. It's just
That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm tickled that he can keep it up. 35, and we've made it to March 27th, and he hasn't announced that he's retiring yet. So I'm just gonna.
Well, I heard that the Bo brothers changed their training regime. That
they did.
Up till now, Tarja would always follow JT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this year, or this past season, JT was following Tarja and telling him to hurry up. So I think that's where the increase in speed comes from.
Move! Get out of my way, you slowpoke!
Hop, hop! Hey, yeah. It worked.
Yeah, certainly did. Was this his first or second season with as a dad? I don't remember, but
I don't know. No,
you know, we talked a lot about mom power. What about dad power? Hmm?
Yeah. I'm so excited that I actually got to talk to him for like 5 seconds.
Oh yeah, I think if I was to make my my dream list of interviews, like, man, he'd be like right at the top. There are a lot of people, but just as like a genial, nice person and just excellent biathlete. Ugh. Yeah. Just a few more things before we leave Tarja behind, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
10 podiums is the second most in his career. 16 top fives was the second most in his career. And 23 top tens was the most in his career. And before you say that, you know, the number of races might have changed. No, he actually did 23 top tens with one less race than he had in his globe winning season. So he was actually more consistent this year in the top 10 than he was in the season he won the globe. So anyway, I could go on for probably the next hour, because I think that if I was ranking my favorite athletes of all time,
how do you get him off the team?
Tarja,
what if you're a Boughton or Serdum?
Well, they tried.
What do you need to do to get him off?
Right? They tried to expose him to a snake in the off season, and it didn't slow him down. He still won another globe, so I think they're going to have to up their game. Maybe a cougar, you know, put a cougar in a mountain lion in his path, and I don't know. I honestly don't know. He is.
I know. I think their best luck is that he seems such a super nice guy that he could be like, you know what? I've been at the top long enough. I'm going to give you a chance and I'll step down. Not. Yeah. I don't see him do that, but that's probably their best bet.
No. So here's the thing. Boughton is, by the time he gets on to the World Cup on a regular level, like, he's not going to be a young man anymore at this rate, right? Right. Because he's already 24.
Well, compared to Tarja, he is.
Well, he's going to turn 25. This, like, he's never going to get a chance to compete for the U25 because he's going to be 25 next year. Anyway. Because Tarja won't leave. And I don't want him to.
I'm actually wondering
who retires
if
first,
Christensen,
someone
like
or Tarja.
Yeah. Boughton or Tarja. but it makes me think of Dalla as well, because you have all these young ones pushing from the bottom, but then you would hope that there's a spot above you opening up, and it's just not happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Unless they decide otherwise, but
yeah,
they're not declining enough.
No, they're not. So the Norwegians, they swept the top five in the IBU Cup, the top six in the World Cup, and I don't
top five World Cup.
Top five? Oh, Jacqueline was six, right?
Yeah. And that's a good lead into my question.
Yes.
How do you feel about Jekyll's season?
He gave me more entertainment than anybody else. There are more times when I just wanted to pull my hair out, bang my head into the wall, and also scream in joy, right? Because it was just so wild. I hope that he does this forever. You know, never change. It's the best. My initial impression is that it was a disappointing season, but I think that's just because the first, what, 6 or 8 weeks were, and then he closed on such just a wild, frenetic, out of control finish that it made it, I don't know, just made it exciting. Sorry,
yeah,
I interrupted
World Cup
you.
Season. No, that's so he was 20th in the first trimester.
Yeah.
18th in the second. No, sorry. 13th in the second trimester and third in the last trimester, not including the World Championships. And you know, they at some point should start thinking about a globe for the best non-Norwegian.
Yeah. Right.
And I also felt that it wasn't the best season for him, and it may not be his best, but it actually makes me really happy that he is the best non-Norwegian. And I do like the excitement he brings and, mm-hmm. you know, the high risk, high reward. But, so I've been doing some analysis on his shooting and I'm not done. So I'm going to leave that for another episode. But I'm actually, based on the stats, I'm starting to think that he just needs to keep doing what he's doing. And it's going to work for him. So since we're on that topic anyway, a couple stats that mm-hmm. Came out of that analysis so far. So I'm using the term shot range, which is basically a series of five shots. Mm-hmm. So it was 84 of those for him. He had 33 that were clean, 19 on prone, and 14 in standing. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to ask you, do you have any idea of his shooting time rankings per shot?
No.
So for prone, like shot 1 to 5, he was ranked 46th, 2nd, 14th, 2nd, and 9th. For standing, his first shot was ranked 13th, and then the rest of the shots 1-1, 1-1. So his 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th standing shooting shots are fastest of everyone. Yeah. And, you know, with these stats, you're talking about 2.015, 2.018. No, he's mm-hmm. 0.1 faster in his fifth shot than anybody else. And we're talking like 2.0 to 2.1, mm-hmm. which sounds, you know, irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But that's a large margin.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not conclusive yet, but I actually think when he does shoot fast, his chances of going 5 for 5 are larger than when he starts slowing down. And maybe we're just going to find something that he already knows and that slowing down doesn't make him shoot better.
Yeah. He's already the best he can be. I shouldn't say the best he can be, but he's already
doing what works best for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Any other positive things that stood out for you on the men's side?
Hold on 1 second.
Oh yeah.
Did you just get a message that a new recording was started? Sorry, that's why I stopped.
No, so continuing.
Okay. Yeah, it said a new recording was started, so I don't know what that was about. Do you want to since we're so deep into the men, do you want to just keep going with the men for a bit and then finish up the men and then go to the women? I think that's working well.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I shared with you a meme that Lagret posted, and he was doing a recap, you know, one image for each one of his months or each one of the weeks of the season. The one for Lindsay, it had me laughing for way too long, and it was the meme from Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Danny DeVito was saying, "So anyway, I started blasting." I just started laughing so hard. And it said something like, why did you miss the race? And it was like athlete one, because I wasn't feeling well, athlete two, because I had COVID, and athlete three was Lagrid. So anyway, I started blasting. I just, I think we talked about him a little bit before, but what a odd season he had. He comes into the year, he's had three straight or two, whatever, second place overall finishes, and comes into the year, his form isn't quite right. He's not skiing very well. He has this shooting incident in Switzerland. And it just sort of seemed at times like it was the year where everything was going to go wrong. And then he also ends up with that miraculous sprint gold at Worlds and a couple of other, wins late in the season. And it's like, I don't really know what to make of it. It was just kind of a weird year. It ended up being successful, but it was just kind of strange.
Yeah, I actually had him. I made this header, surprises and oddities, and Sturla having his worst season ever and coming in fourth is what I wrote down. And it feels like he was never really in contention, but
yeah.
I would write it down as a bad season for him.
Yeah. Yep.
But apparently, and when you just look at his scores or ranks on all the races and stuff, he's never too far out. Of course, he had some dips, but I think that, and we've talked about that before, that he's pretty consistent in never really having an off day. But I think in Canmore he was so done.
Yeah, I think he was just
basically going in a bathing suit, and he just looked
so funny.
It looked so hard.
What were his finishes?
The other thing that was an oddity is that when he started taking his headband off, it was almost impossible to recognize him.
I know. Yeah, he strikes me as just being a very fun loving guy. Like, he's serious. He takes it very seriously, but I also think that he's very fun-loving. And so I think that by the end of the season, he was just having fun with it. He got the gold in the sprint and the silver in the pursuit and the worlds. And that was kind of like, all right, I did what I needed to do. And then, of course, he won two races in Oslo. So, but man.
Well, and because he started with 29 points, 21 points, 16 points, and then 75, 50, 50, 60, and then zero. But I must say, at the beginning of the season, I was a bit worried. Is he going to be dropped for a bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about it. Would he? How Christensen took the week off right after Christmas. Would that have been a helpful thing for Lagrid to do? But it seemed to work out okay. I mean, it was definitely a weird. I can't get away from that word. It was just a weird season because he had these highs that were just as good, if not better than ever. And then he had these lows that were like, what, who is this person? Who is this person that has taken over his body? So I'm going to assume that next season we see something more like what we've seen in the past with just long stretches of top tens, top fives, but I guess we'll see.
Well, and he's always been such a Mr. Consistent when it comes to shooting. And it just this year seemed a bit different. So I don't know if he changed his approach and didn't work out or focused on skiing more or who knows. But
yeah, it was very it was unusual because we just haven't seen it before. And I guess now we'll see what happens. I also wonder, and this is not me, I guess I'm speculating, but I don't actually think this. You finished second three times in a row. Does it get harder to put in all of the work because you're like, oh my God, like what else can I do? Or do you change your goals? Like maybe I'm not going to be the overall, but I'm going to aim more for world championship events. Like I said, I don't actually think that.
That's a toughie because on the one hand, I would like to think that all these top athletes have one goal and that's the globe.
Mm-hmm.
They're at that level that they know they can. But at the same time, as long as JT Bowe is showing seasons like this, are you mentally okay to accept that you're battling for second spot?
Yeah.
Like, they'll never say it, I'm sure, but
Yeah, I mean, I would struggle with it.
I'm even thinking Tarjei.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, you know, being so close, I'm sure he believed that he could do it. But at the same time, you know, if anybody knows JT, it's him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Remember last week we talked about being a fly on the wall when Emilien Jacquelin talked to his coach?
Yeah.
Could you imagine? So I think I talked to you before about the double teamer podcast with Eric Lesser and Arne Pfeiffer. Could you imagine the Bow Brothers podcast?
Oh, man.
In a couple of years?
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
I mean, I'm sure they've got better things to do with their life, but that would be so much fun and so interesting.
Didn't they write a book?
Yeah. I looked for it even to see if I could order a German copy, but never was successful in that. But like, it would be so much fun if for the last five seasons they recorded themselves but didn't publish it. And then when they're both done, that they would publish it as a delayed podcast, kind of.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
That would be so cool. Especially this season, right? At the end of the season, where they must have been joking with each other all the time.
Oh, yeah. But you, I don't know, maybe they weren't. Maybe they got really fierce and competitive. I don't think so.
But, yeah, who knows? Yeah. I mean, they're still brothers. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that happens, but I don't know. I've been thinking about how you were saying that a lot of biathletes are just really humble and kind people. And I wonder if biathlon as a sport is a, of course it's competitive with, you know, you want to win the race, you want to win the globe, et cetera. But at the same time, it's a very much a competition against yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of athletes, if not all of them, they know that the only thing they can do is be their best and then see how that compares to the others.
Mm-hmm.
Pursuit and mass start, there's of course a little bit of, you know, outwitting the opponent or mm-hmm. some final stretch of skiing strategies, whatever it is. But the majority of time, you're just battling against yourself.
Yeah.
And maybe that's always also why it's a bit easier to accept that you didn't win. Like if you did the best you could, if you had the best race of your life, but there's just another guy who just happened to be even better.
Mm-hmm.
You can't blame yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not like basketball or soccer, right? There's nobody mm-hmm. playing defense on you. There's nobody, right? There's the other guy isn't directly affecting your right. Your race. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that also makes it maybe have more respect for the people that do beat you, right?
Yeah. You know what they did.
Wow. Anyway.
So, what do you think about the German team this year?
I think they outperformed mm-hmm. themselves.
Yeah.
And the fact that they not have one or two that did really well and the rest kind of, you know, average. They, mm-hmm. you know, I think they, what, have five in the top 15 or something?
Kuhn, Dole, Strelo, Navrat were 12, 13, 14, 15, and then Horn was 20th.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely have the feeling that...
by the way, Kuhn through Navrat, they were separated by 17, 27, 30-ish points.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, 28 points, only, yeah, they're not that far off, a couple of spots higher either. But
no,
no, I think overall they did quite well.
Yeah,
I think my biggest concern with them would be the age of the group.
Yeah,
Strelo is the youngest at 27, I think, and then you have Kuhn 32, well, Dole's retired 34, Navrat 31. Horn 29 and mm-hmm. Roman Rees 31.
And then Reed Mueller, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 25. And then David Zobel is 27. So there's not a, like, I don't know if they don't have them at the moment or if they're just not quite ready yet. I didn't really check on the IBU Cup level, but so that would be a bit of a concern if I was the coaching staff. But I would say, generally speaking, the switch to the what was the assistant coach, now the head coach, after many years of I forgot his name, but German head coach who was there a long time.
Yeah,
it didn't get worse.
No, it didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
So. How about you? How do you?
No, that's. I think that pretty much is exactly how I feel. Is that they've got a bunch of guys who are very competitive, but not that top end talent. And I think that they did a very good job of maximizing what they had this year. Hopefully, I know Reith Mueller and Strelo were not young guys. Hopefully, they're able to on their way up. Or be on their way up, I should say. And but I don't know that they necessarily have that competing for the overall, you know, level that I think a lot of German fans would like to see of them. And I think that we all would like to see of them too.
Right.
So hopefully that's not a, I don't know. I just don't know who's coming up in their junior ranks or their IBU Cup that's really shown incredible signs. That's on the younger end too, because, you know, all these guys, Kaiser's 24, you know, Benjamin Mentz, you know, he had a bit of a up and down year on the junior level. So, I guess.
And it's funny how a character of a nation in sports settles in your head. Cause like for me growing up, you know, 70s, 80s, German soccer teams were never beat.
Yeah.
And if you look back in the stats, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, more than half of their winning goals were like in extra time or like past 85 minutes. They were, I don't know how they did it, but they always came back. And, you know, you create that character for a team, and then other teams are like, I know we're 1-0 up, but it's the Germans, right? And I always like from watching, Sven Fischer and Frank Luck and that team. They always seemed very solid and strong at the final shootings, cool-headed. And you don't see that, at least not consistently.
Yeah.
Consistently with most of these Germans. I haven't really looked at the stats, but I'd be surprised if their final shooting ratios were really high. And I don't know, like, I'm very philosophical today, but it's almost like the Germans need to get a bit of an identity again.
Yeah. I the guys I think of are like Navarath and Dole even. And it just, when they get to the final shooting, I just didn't have that. Dole was a little bit different, you know, recently, but didn't have that confidence that they were going to Kuhn, same thing, that they were going to hit those shots. It just, and I think
Yeah, exactly it. Yeah. Nothing. With Fischer, if he was leading and he would go in the final shooting, you're like, oh, second right? or worse. Where, for, not Fischer, but if you're behind him. But yeah,
sure.
It's a bit of a
Strelo,
different.
I think Strelo, I feel pretty confident in, but I don't know that I feel as confident in his skiing. He's made improvements there, but for me, when I look at him, I'm like, he has to have the perfect race to be competitive. Whereas guys, you know, I look at the men above them, you know, they don't feel like they have to be perfect in order to, you know, try to find the top 10 or try, not the top 10, but the podium. So it's just, I don't know. I just, they seem
overall
sort of
still good though.
Oh, very, very good. Right. Yeah. I just, they're definitely, you know, dropped in the pecking order of.
Well, and they were what? Number two in the Nations Cup on the men's side?
So. And they did really great in the relays too,
like,
right?
France and Sweden behind. Yeah, no, for sure.
So it's the, you know, like you said, overperformed. They overperformed their, you know, the sum of the whole is greater than the individual parts. So So I you know, I just, you want to see them back in the very top where they weren't even that long ago with Pfeiffer, with
yeah.
But
Lesser. Yeah.
Yep. Speaking of people who were at the very top not that long ago, we mentioned him briefly, but QFM. Have we seen his best? Is he on the downslope? Is he going to come back stronger next year, or where are we in the arc of Fuel My A?
Well, where does he sit in the French picking order for you?
I think he's third.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, and I don't think that's crazy to say, right? I think that
nope,
so
that's exactly what
I've said
thought.
It several times. Perreault is my guy, right? I both his youth and his consistency, like I feel like I can count on mm-hmm. him. And then Jacqueline, he showed a much higher top end than we saw from QFM, aside from, you know, one or two races, one of which he messed up his penalty loops, right? So that's just kind of where I feel like he is. And he's maybe next year he comes back and he's better than ever, but sort of at his age and I think he's sort of probably better than 16th.
Put it differently.
But,
do you think his crazy winning season was that an outlier for him? Just one of those seasons where everything just worked out.
Overall, I don't. When we list our favorites our men who can win the overall, you know, I don't know that I'd see him winning another one.
No,
maybe a top five in the overall. But like, if I look at, do I think that next season he's going to be better than Lagrid? No. Do I think he's going to be better than Dalet? No. Do I think he's going to be better than Jacquemel?
A Norwegian.
I mean, was that
a Norwegian?
Oh, a Norwegian. that's a good question, though, right? I don't know. And look, he will go down as one of, like, what, 20 greatest biathletes of all time, which is a crazy thing to say, but he's got an overall globe. He's got a couple other top three finishes. And
Without really thinking about it, I would not think he would be in that list for me.
I'll send you my list later, and I'll see what you think. This will be
for
a summer conversation episode. Yeah, all time. So one of my goals this summer is to build a sort of like a biathlon temple, and so I'll that's kind of like a July project. But I'll send you my early list later. Challenge to all the listeners. You make up your list too, and see where he comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else stand out for you? We didn't mention Roster Guyev's. Speaking of somebody I on my radar for like the occasional top 10, but certainly not the kind of success he had this season. So that was
And we've talked a lot about Tarja being, you know, getting a bit older. He's same age, eh? Roster Guyev, 35.
How about that? Yeah, mid-30s, just like the early 30s. We're not so old.
I think one of it. Like he shot better, but I think his skiing was also better.
Yeah.
Good point.
Talked a little bit about Hofer the last couple of weeks. Was happy to see him back.
Yeah, what surprised me, I always rated him as a very fast shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote down that he had... let me look that up quickly. I think he had one of the worst shooting times, like over the season. Slowest.
Just catching up with him?
Yeah. For all athletes that had 10 or more races, he had the slowest prone shooting time with 36.6. That really surprised me. I looked up if there was like a huge outlier that he was something happened and he was there for 2 minutes and that brought down the, but I didn't find that. But
yeah,
I mean, great to see him back, and maybe not in contention per se, but in the mix. So
I see no reason why we shouldn't expect to see him doing roughly the same thing next year, if not even a little bit better, right? Because it did seem like he sort of gained steam midway through the season. So hopefully there's a little bit more left in the tank. I meant to come back to him. We mentioned Jacquemel like almost an hour ago now, but and I meant to come back to him. You know, our U25 winner. Mm-hmm. Where do you think his future lies? Do you think that he can be an overall Globe contender down the road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do. He has that, shooting fast.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a bit of the new style of shooting now is high risk, high reward.
Yeah. Shoot for glory.
And I mean, obviously, like he's basically been, almost say shared, but like he was basically the best under 25 athlete for 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I mean, Hardwick
it's pretty good.
Beat him about a small number of points, but
yeah,
that still puts you in the best category. And he's getting better. So yeah, no, I definitely see him challenge for the Globe. Maybe not next year, but Olympics at home.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's going to be depending a lot on how does he deal with stress and that kind of thing. And is it somebody who, you know, feeds off the crowd or has a more negative effect? We'll have to see. But
this may be a sort of I sit on my couch thing to say, but I think that with Perot closing down the gap in Soldier Hollow and then Jacquemel coming back and not getting tense, not getting tight, like and winning it, I think that was really important for his future.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Just to prove it to himself that when it gets tight, when it gets tense, that I can do this. Yeah. So really
very similar to Lisa Vitozzi in a way.
Yeah, very much. Yep.
Right. What I asked her in that interview too. Like
mm-hmm.
Yeah, she came in second. It was super frustrating, but she became a better biathlete and
yeah.
Maybe that was a bit of the case for Jacquemel. And so he can next year he will still be competing for the U25, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He could win it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm excited for his future. These guys are still so young. Absolutely. They're good.
Yeah,
and it's not just that they're the best U25. Like they're good. They can compete.
So in 5 years, can you envision a Globe race between Jacquemel and Perot?
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Jacquemel, Perot, and Tarjei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you'll have Jacquemel, you'll have Perot, Lagrange will still be hopefully, you know, able to contend in that. I mean, it'll be 31, 32 ish. Hartveg, Campbell Wright. I mean, that could be a really fun group. And then, whatever Norwegians or Isaac Frey, whoever else is going to come up. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I really am.
I don't want to, before we leave the men behind, I don't want to dwell on these things, but were there any things that disappointed you on the men's side this year?
I already mentioned Samuelsson. Right? I think that's, mm-hmm. And I'm disappointed because I continue to get my hopes up and I will continue to get my hopes up. And I don't care if it leads to more disappointment. I'll keep doing it.
Right. And I would say the Swedes in general.
Yeah.
Not having the best season.
Yep.
I had QFM as well. We talked about that. Hartwick struggling with his health was really disappointing, obviously, for him. But just in general, I was really hoping to see him continue his form. Mm-hmm. Benny Dole's last race. You know, you always hope something like Lesser happens and makes you realize how special it is. But he still,
it was amazing.
I was still hoping that he would do a little bit better, but I also think he went all out and so be it kind of thing.
He had a great last season though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The fact that he had was one win or two wins?
Two wins, yep. Most in his career. Yeah. Two wins in a season.
Yeah. So no, that is super cool.
World's medal, so yeah. Happy for him.
Yeah. No, and you know, with all due respect for them, I was disappointed in the Canadian team.
Yeah. No, I feel
actually both men's and women's, but
I was going to mention them as well. It was a weird year for Canadian biathlon.
Yeah.
It just felt like they never got started.
Yeah. And then I think they stayed home for the World Cup after Christmas.
There was illness. Emma Linder had a couple of good results in Soldier Hollow, and Adam Ronalds had a couple scattered good finishes. And
he actually had a good season, I think. Yeah, he did overall.
Yeah, Nadia Moser had some good finishes as well, but I still have hope. Like I still think when I look at the Canadian women, and I guess this might be where we transition into the women's, but when I look at the Canadian women, that there's a lot of young talent there, so I keep being hopeful. But sticking to the men, it was also when you think about Trevor Kearse retiring, Jewel retired last year. It just feels like there's a little stagnant. There's like there's something there, and I don't know.
Yeah, I know shared that feeling.
Yeah. So I just
I
just want them. I want good things, and it's just I feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It just makes you, as a smaller team on the World Cup, you're so dependent on even success of one or two athletes, right?
Yeah. That's it. They have a bad season.
Emma Linder has always been strong, and Christian Gao has always been strong, and they both didn't have the season that we were hoping for from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I think has an impact on the whole team.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said I didn't want to dwell on it, so I'm not going to. But that was sad to see. That it wasn't working out.
Totally agree. Any last thoughts for the men?
No, but I had a couple of questions for you.
Yeah, let's
do it. Kind of in between the men and the women.
Yep.
I'm looking at average points per trimester.
Mm-hmm.
Who had the highest point average for a trimester? So not, I don't need to know for 1, 2, and 3, but
highest points per trimester was Vitazzi or was it Jean Monod? But I go back and forth. Probably Jean Monod in trimester 3.
As I'm checking my dashboard, it timed out. So, Oh, now I need to get it back. Come on. Come on. Yeah, so it was on the men's side, Christensen. He had an average of 74 points in the second trimester.
And that was
Jean Monod, 68.3 in the third trimester.
Man. And that was so Christensen, remember he missed that week in Oberhof, and he had those comments about, kind of being ticked that he was left out, and then he came back and he was awesome and refolding and
Absolutely,
No, I'm glad you brought that up because that was a good memory to come back, and that was just kind of silly, kind of goofy.
So for every athlete that had more than 5 races this season, if you think of their worst rank of the season, who had the highest?
So who had the least bad, worst rank?
Yeah.
It's probably going to be somebody who finished at near the top. I want to go with Jean Monod again. Yeah, sure.
No, she had a couple of races where she was sick, right? So
yeah, but were they that bad? Vitozzi?
Vitozzi at 21. Okay. Tenrevolt worst was 19, and Preutz worst was 9th. And for the men, it was JT, worst was 18, Christensen 19, and Dahle 20. And then we had Riedmüller, Bolton, and Tarje 26 is their worst.
That's pretty good for Reed, Miller, and Bowden. You know, you asked about disappointments for the men. Disappointments for the women is just not getting to see a full healthy season from Preutz, because that was just stellar racing. It felt like she raced half a season and still finished 11th in the overall.
I know. That's the frustrating thing, right? Talk about what if.
Yeah.
We're talking about consistency now. So basically the smallest spread between the lowest and the highest rank for an athlete. And these are tough.
Preutz.
Because they're Preutz, yes, correct. So
when your worst finish is ninth, there's a limited spread.
Second and ninth. Yeah. And then I had Kadeva from Bulgaria, Beer and Tendervolt. They all had 18. So Kadeva was 81 and 99.
Yeah.
Beer was 14 to 32, and Tendervolt 1 to 19.
That's so crazy.
On the men's side, we had Muckles from Belgium and Patriuks from Latvia. Uh-huh. With 13, 80 to 93.
Man,
I didn't write down the other. And then Chesnek from Slovakia with 14, and JT with 17, 1 and 18. And the widest spread, can you take a guess on that?
Somebody who had a very high finish and then had some really low ones.
Yep. So very Elvira. Inconsistent results.
Elvira.
No, she's not on that list. Campbell Wright, between 6 and 90. We had the Rush Korean Lapshin and Invenius from Finland with 82. And of the people that won, it was Dahl with 73. So best was first and last was 74th.
Oh, my goodness.
And on the women, we have Yakiela had 81, so her best was 11, and worst was 92. Chervatova from the Czech Republic and Tamara Steiner from Austria had 79. Chervatova 8 to 87, and Tamara Steiner 13 and 92. And of the people that had at least a win, it was Justine Brejaboucher with 41. So 42nd was her worst place.
Helps out when you have five wins.
Quick shout out to Biathlon 23 on, is he on Instagram or she?
Definitely on Twitter. Don't know about Instagram.
X, right? Or Twitter?
Yeah, whatever we're calling it.
So I just looked up the two nations that had the most ranked 23 finishes were Germany and France with 4 each.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, so I have a couple more stats, but we'll do that after the women.
Awesome. Okay.